Today's reading is Psalm 23, which can be found on page 555 of the Church Bibles. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Good morning. I want to begin this morning with a question, and the question is this: who do you trust? Who do you turn to when everything in your life is going wrong? Who do you turn to share your most intimate thoughts and feelings? Maybe it's your spouse, it might be a friend, it might be a family member. Can you picture that person for me? You done that? Okay, here's a second question. Why do you trust them? What is it about them that makes them trustworthy? Maybe it's the length of your relationship. Maybe it's that you've been through difficult experiences together. Usually, I guess, it's because in some way, over time, they've proved themselves to be trustworthy. We all love having someone to trust, don't we? It's great. We live in a world, however, where it's becoming harder and harder to trust those beyond our immediate friends and family. A society where it can feel like our trust is continually being abused. Whether it be trust in politicians, celebrities, whether it be trust in institutions. As a society, we no longer automatically trust those around us. We've been let down too many times. It's hard to know who to trust. We're in the middle of a series on the Psalms, and what we're trying to do is glean timeless truths from these ancient songs, ancient prayers, truths which speak to us. And these songs and these prayers have sustained followers of God for centuries. So I believe this is a psalm with real modern relevance, especially given what I've just said about trust in our world. Because this psalm is a call to place our trust in someone who will never let us down. A call to trust God in the face of life's darkest circumstances. And it's the cry of someone who's been through the highs and lows of life and has found God to be faithful and dependable. Like many of the Psalms, this was written by King David, perhaps one of the greatest kings in the history of Israel. And I want to begin by considering why it is that David believes God to be trustworthy. He begins, "The Lord is my shepherd." The Lord is my shepherd. Just think about that for a moment. The Lord, the Almighty One, the Creator of heaven and earth, is my shepherd. My shepherd. I love that he knows that God is both this Almighty One, but he knows him as my shepherd. It's personal. Now, if you're anything like me, as a city dweller, the closest you ever get to sheep is, well, nowhere really, but the closest I get to wildlife is probably the deer in Richmond Park, and only then at a distance, hopefully. I'm not a big fan of wildlife. And so when I think of shepherds, what comes to mind, and I think this is probably from a TV program I watched as a child for some reason, is something like this: a shepherd with a long green coat on, wellies and a flat cap, often with a sheepdog and a whistle in hand. And that's the picture I have in my mind of shepherds. Now that may, or probably not, be a fair representation of shepherds in the 21st century. But shepherding in ancient Israel, and even in the Middle East today, I guess, was a very different business. Because if you're a sheep farmer in Wales or New Zealand, somewhere nice and green with a good supply of water, your job is fairly straightforward. What sheep need, food and water, is all around you. But to be a shepherd in the Middle East is a totally different job. To be a shepherd in ancient Israel meant living the life of a nomad. You'd have to take your sheep all over the place, trying to find fresh water, trying to find pasture. You'd face danger on a regular basis, having to fight off dangerous animals that would attack your flock. You would live with your animals, you would sleep with your animals, you would eat with your animals. You couldn't just go home to a nice comfortable farmhouse at the end of the day. The life of a shepherd was intimately connected to the life of his sheep. He was responsible for them and cared deeply for them. One of the things I love about this psalm is that the Bible tells us that David was a shepherd. And this means that he knew the reality of what it meant to be a shepherd. He knew that it was a shepherd's job to provide sheep with everything they need. Without a shepherd, sheep are in big trouble. David knows God in a personal way. The Lord is my shepherd. And because of that, he trusts him to meet his needs. I shall not want, he says. The thing is, so often, we don't trust God because we haven't got to know him personally. I don't know if any of you are on Twitter, any Twitter users out there? No? Okay, let me just explain Twitter to you in very basic terms. It's a computer program which effectively allows you to share your thoughts, your musings with the world in very minute snippets, and also gives you the ability to follow other people and hear their musings and random thoughts. The unique thing about Twitter is that you can follow celebrities. So you might want to follow David Beckham, or I think possibly Barack Obama has a Twitter account. You can follow these people and you get an insight into their lives. You can hear what they have for breakfast. You can even see pictures of it sometimes. It's all really good stuff. But the reality about Twitter is that although you might find out interesting facts about these people, you don't actually know them. You can know about them, but you don't really know them. And it can be a bit like that in our relationship with God. We can know all there is to know about God. I've just spent 3 years at theological college, and believe me, there are a lot of books about God. And I could have read every single book in our library, but that wouldn't have meant that I'd actually know God. Because knowing about God and knowing God are two different things. I can even say I'm following God. I can come along to church and do all the right things. But it doesn't mean that I actually know him in a personal way. The amazing thing is that God invites us to know him personally, to know him as our shepherd, as your shepherd. This is the invitation of God. And I want to suggest this morning three ways in which we, like David, can know God personally, know him working in our lives in a personal way. Firstly, God provides. David knows that good shepherds always provide for their sheep. And likewise, God always provides for his children. I've already mentioned that David is able to say, I shall not want. And he goes on to say that he makes me lie down in green pastures. Now, I wonder if you can imagine a flock of sheep for me. Can you do that? Now, are those sheep standing up or sitting down. Hands up if they're standing up. Pretty much everyone. Now, I've been doing a bit of research into sheep this week, the fascinating life of a curate. And apparently, if you talk to a shepherd, it's actually nearly impossible to get a sheep to lie down. Did you know that? No, you do now. Four things have to be satisfied for a sheep to lie down. Firstly, sheep are very timid creatures. So there has to be an absence of fear. Secondly, they're very social creatures. They sort out their pecking order by butting one another. So unless there's an absence of friction within the flock, they will not lie down. There has to be peace. Thirdly, sheep are tormented by more pests than pretty much any other animal. And so there has to be freedom from pests. And finally, they have to be fed before they will lie down. Now, the point of telling you that pretty uninteresting information is to say that it's really hard to get a sheep to lie down. And what David is talking about is a shepherd who's able to do this, who's able to satisfy his sheep's deepest needs, enabling them to lie down in green pastures. We've just spent 3 years in Bristol, as I just said, and going into those 3 years, we knew that it was going to be hard financially. You go out from working full-time into being a student. You're given a grant by the Church of England, but it's not much. And so we knew it was going to be a stretch, but we felt sure this is what God was calling us to. So we decided to trust God. And honestly, I could stand here all morning and tell you about the different ways in which God provided for us over those 3 years. I was going to tell you one. Halfway through our first year, Lucy became pregnant with Hannah, who's out in the creche there. And it became apparent that the house we were in was not going to be big enough for three children. Our dining room was only really big enough. Well, actually, it got to the point where Lucy couldn't get round our table in our dining room because it was that small. Our bath was like a half-size bath, so you couldn't actually lie down in it. It was fine for when we had two children, but it was going to become really, really difficult with three, especially a baby. And we started to look at alternatives, where we might be able to move to. We just couldn't find the right place. We prayed about it and prayed about it, and it just looked like nothing was going to come up. Every option we explored seemed to get shut down. Until one day, when we'd almost given up hope, we hear about this house literally two roads down from where we were. And we were absolutely staggered because we went to look at this house and it was going to be perfect. It was brilliant. Unfortunately, though, we went to inquire, went to see the landlords, and he said, "This is great. We'd love to have you guys in. Can you move in September? The problem with that was that we needed to be out of our house midway through July, which is going to leave us with 6 weeks where we'd have nowhere to live. And so we gave up. It was impossible. It just couldn't work. There was no way we could have moved into that house with three children. Hannah would have been about 2 weeks old at the time. So we gave up pretty much. But God had other ideas. Lucy, my wife, went to see her sister, who also lives in Bristol, for a coffee one day. Her sister sat down and just said, "Oh, how you doing?" And she knew about the situation and heard about it. And she said to Lucy, "Look, we want to give you guys our house for 6 weeks." She's got two daughters. And she said, "Look, we'll go away. You can have the house for yourself. You can move in there for 6 weeks, and this will mean you can move into that house." And we were absolutely blown away, firstly by her generosity, but also by the fact that God was working. God was at work, and it seemed impossible. But in the end, we moved in. This is actually the day we moved out of our house, but I couldn't find any other pictures. But we moved into the house, and for 2 years, it was absolutely brilliant. It was such a sign of God's provision. Every time we came through a front door, we knew that this house was given to us by God for the time we were there. God provided. It didn't necessarily happen the way we thought it should, but he did. David said that God makes us lie down in green pastures. He's able to meet our needs. Do we really trust him to do that? Secondly, David knows that good shepherds seek to guide their sheep. And likewise, he knows that God is a God who guides his children. He leads me beside quiet waters, we also read in verse 2. If you think of the landscape of Wales or New Zealand again, what comes to mind is a land full of streams and rivers. But as I've already said, in the Middle East, picture a landscape there, dry and arid. The shepherd had to have real skill to search the right way and to lead his sheep to the right place to find water. David goes on, he guides me in paths of righteousness. Now, as I've already said, I've been doing a bit of research into sheep this week, and it's become apparent that sheep are not the brightest of creatures. This I came across as a newspaper report. First, one sheep jumped to its death, then stunned Turkish shepherds who had left the flock to graze while they had breakfast, watched as nearly 1,500 others followed, each leaping off the same cliff. In the end, 450 dead animals lay on top of one another in a billowy white pile. Those who jumped later were saved as the pile got higher and the fall more cushioned. It's best not to think too much about that. But the point is this, sheep need a shepherd. They need to be guided. Those poor shepherds having their breakfast just for a minute didn't guide their sheep. And look what happened. David has such trust and confidence in God that not only is able to say that he leads him beside quiet waters and in paths of righteousness, but also to say that even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Nearly 6 years ago, I found myself standing about 2 miles in that direction by Penn Pond in Richmond Park. I don't know if any of you know that. Here's a picture of it. And for various reasons, I was probably at one of the lowest points in my life. I spent the previous month or so just feeling like I was surrounded by complete darkness. Everything felt pointless. I felt useless, and I felt that everything I would do would be useless. And I'd near enough given up on God. And I can remember standing beside that pond, pouring out my heart to God, and just hearing him whisper, "You need to trust me to lead you out of this." And I realized that I had to make a choice. Either I was going to trust God in this moment, or I was going to choose to go my own way. And so often faith comes down to those moments in life. Do we choose to trust God, or do we walk around away from him? And I'm not saying it's easy, it never is, of course it's not. Sometimes we have to choose to trust, despite any evidence for it. But I chose in that moment to trust God. And in the face of all my fear and doubt, gradually, bit by bit, he led me out of that valley. Biblical scholars differ on when they think this psalm was written. But the majority, and I kind of agree with them, believe that David wrote this very late on in life. And if you think about David at the end of his life, perhaps writing this psalm, if you think about some of the things that happened to him, he'd had to flee for his life at various points. His best friend had been slain in the battlefield. He'd had a child die as a baby. Other sons have rebelled against him. I just wonder, perhaps when David wrote these words, whether he'd been looking over his life and in hindsight was able to see that in the tough times, God had never abandoned him. He was right there in the midst of his pain, the midst of his suffering, guiding him and leading him through. In the tough times, we're faced with a choice. Do we turn to God or away from him? Sometimes it's only with hindsight that we're able to look back and see his hand upon our lives, bringing beauty out of brokenness, walking with us through the valley of the shadow of death. So if you're in that place this morning, please be assured that God is with you. He won't abandon you. He's with you right in the midst of your struggle. And you can trust that he won't let you go. Of course, you can choose to turn away from him. You can give up on him. You can choose to walk on off a cliff if you want. But if you choose to follow him, he will lead you through. So a good shepherd always provides. A good shepherd always guides. Yes, sounds great, doesn't it? Thirdly, a good shepherd corrects his sheep. Doesn't sound so comfortable, does it? Isn't quite so appealing. Your rod and staff, they comfort me, David says. The rod and staff were the shepherd's tools of discipline to correct their sheep, to bring them back when they wandered. And sometimes I think we can really struggle with the idea that God is a God who might correct us, who might discipline us at times. Why would a loving God want to discipline his children? But as a father, I know that I'm not doing my job if I never chose to discipline my children. If I just let them wander off and do whatever they want, I would not be particularly loving, would I? To correct them, to make sure they understand the right way to live, is me doing the best I can for them. David understands that God's discipline comes from a place of love. And that's why I think he's able to say it's a source of comfort. Often, if we're open to it, God will use those people around us to discipline us. Lucy will tell you that I can be quite an intense character at times. I'm an introvert. And I tend to kind of, when I'm focused on something, we'll go into my own little world. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. But I kind of zone out the world around me, which is fine, you know, if you're by yourself. But if you're in a job where you have to interact with people, as I do, it's not so good at times. And I can remember one day, it was at the end of church, and I think I'd been leading worship all day, and I was pretty tired and was packing up and was just in this zone, trying to get done what I needed to get done. And someone came up to me and just, I think they asked me a question. I can't remember what the question was. But let's put it this way. I wasn't particularly pastoral in my response. And slightly dismissed them. And Lucy had seen this interaction. And when we got home, decided to point out that perhaps I could have handled that situation in a slightly different way. And I knew in that moment that not only was she doing it because she loved me, but also God was speaking through her, using her to correct me. And I think God does that through people time and time again if we're open to it. He loves us so much. He wants the best for us. And that's why at times he will correct us. Do we trust him enough to be open to his correction? This is the challenge to us this morning, I think. Are we really willing to put our trust in God? Because the Psalms aren't simply to be read or to studied. They're to be lived. We're to enter into them so that their cries become our cries, their story our story. God invites us into a personal relationship with him. He is the shepherd who provides, the shepherd who guides, and the shepherd who corrects. He calls us to trust him because he loves us and he will always be working for our good. He will not let us fall. He will not abandon us. And if we wander, he will come after us because he's our shepherd and he will not let us go. I chose to trust him that day in Richmond Park and I found him faithful. And my hope, my prayer for all of us is that we would do the same. Amen.